thoughts and we can create that silence inside of us.
You say on page 64, all the sadness and drama you have lived in your life was rooted in making assumptions and taking things personally.
Mm-hmm.
Everything revolves around either one or two of those, right?
Yes.
Taking it personally or assuming somebody is thinking the way that you do. I think women make this mistake a lot in relationships, all kinds of relationships, particularly with their spouses and boyfriends and all that, is that you think that person should know how you feel or mm-hmm. what you're thinking. You think that person mm-hmm. should know because they love you, they care about mm-hmm. you, they know. Isn't that a huge one that people make all the time?
Yes, it's happened all the time all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot read minds, really.
So not making assumptions.
I like the idea of one more try and one more chance. On an earlier episode, I mentioned the idea of best you can be. Sometimes setting goals and achieving milestones can feel exhausting and unattainable. These feelings may cause you to quit before you even try anything. What about just saying the words try and chance? Giving yourself a chance to try something, anything, without the pressure to win. Just try. Because trying is the first step to succeeding. You might be searching for motivation, which is why you stumbled onto the show. But motivation isn't a one-size-fits-all. It comes at different times, on different levels, at different volumes, and with many different actions. Don't give up when the first one doesn't get you going. One more try, one more chance. Find something that works for you. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit Encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, make a commitment to yourself to give it one more try and one more chance before you throw in the towel. You have more resolve than you think, and taking time to find a way forward is worth it. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you, how I wound up here. All I needed was a rock that I can lean on. All you needed was something beneath your wings.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society concert series continuing Saturday, February 18th with fingerstyle guitarist Cray Van Kirk. Van Kirk plays a bit of everything when it comes to folk and sings new stories for the 21st century. The Folk Music Series continues Saturday, February 18th at 7:30 in the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. Check it out at kboo.fm under Community Events.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on KBOO
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, Code Pink founder and author Medea Benjamin just back from bringing needed aid to Cuba in the face of a deadly U.S. blockade, embargo, call it what you want. Medea will also talk about the her new book, War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. Also, Code Pink San Francisco gears up for a February 19th Rage Against the War Machine. We'll have Cynthia Papermaster. She'll join us to define the anti-war rage currently boiling up in the anti-war community. Global troubadour Francisco Herrera also joins us to share his rage against the machine. And we replay a clip from John Pilger from last night's interview on Julian Assange. All this coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We broadcast every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. We are live today in San Francisco and Los Angeles. We are happy to have you along with us and really honored to be on the Pacifica Radio Network, the People's Radio Network, non-corporate, non-commercial radio. That's what it is. And it's unique in this country, in this corporate country. We begin the show by welcoming back Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink. She has got her latest book out, War in Ukraine, Extremely Timely, Making Sense Out of a Senseless Conflict. Medea, welcome back to Flashpoints. Welcome back from Havana and from Cuba. Why don't you start there? Tell us about what's happening in Cuba, why you're concerned about the blockade, why that's sort of a frontline issue for you.
Yes, hi, Dennis. Great to be on with you. I'm just back to Cuba. This time I was actually on the eastern part of the island in Santiago, Guantanamo, and Holguín, and could see directly the effects of this hyped up policy that we saw from the Trump administration, carried on now by the Biden administration, which is kind of a hit them while they're down policy. The COVID epidemic hurt Cuba's tourism industry. They were getting millions of tourists, and now a lot of that has dried up. It's also been a very hard time for them with Hurricane Ian that wiped a lot of their crops away. Climate change is a real thing for a Caribbean island. And the U.S. policy is really making people's lives very, very difficult. Scarcity of food, people having to stand on lines, scarcity of medicines, even though they have this great healthcare system with so many trained doctors. They have shortages of everything. We took powdered milk to the children's hospitals and brought basic things like aspirin, Tylenol, because they didn't even have enough of that. So it's very cruel. And the worst part of it is that the Trump administration, in its final days as a giveaway to the right-wing Cuban Americans in Florida, put Cuba back on this list of state sponsors of terrorism, which is ridiculous because it is a victim of terrorism, not a sponsor of terrorism. But in any case, that means that they can't use the SWIFT financial system, that banks don't want to deal with them. It makes everything, all financial transactions, more difficult and more expensive. So that's it in a nutshell, and we're working on a campaign to try to get Cuba off that list of state sponsors of terrorism and to try to put some sense back into this Biden policy, make him go back to what was the Obama-Biden policy of normalizing relations with Cuba.
I mean, you talk about insane policies, and it's very easy to signal out Trump, but this policy, this embargo, that it is beyond insane. I mean, what happens is they're forcing, as typical with U.S. policy in this hemisphere, they're forcing the Cubans out of their country because they're starving, because the embargo is killing them. And then the United States has the pleasure of arresting beating, sometimes killing, and then mass deportations. This is, in my eyes, this is a major international human rights violation.
Well, I'm glad you put it in those terms, Dennis, because I think you're totally right. It should be international, it should be illegal, but it is also so totally immoral and shameful and brutal. We know that from quotes in 1960 that that was the policy officially of the U.S. administration, which is to strangle the economy, make the people miserable so they overthrow the government. Now, they've been trying to do that for 60 years and it hasn't worked. And now they're doing it in an even more cruel fashion on the heels of this pandemic. And the amount of migration from Cuba last year has been larger than it's ever been. 300,000 people, it's 3% of the population. It's huge. And these are young people, educated people, and people who are not leaving for political reasons. They're leaving because of economic reasons. And then the Biden administration turns around and says, well, you know, we're going to address the root causes of migration and we're going to put money into addressing those root causes. And yet the root cause of migration from Cuba is precisely this policy of strangling the economy.
It's incredibly troubling. And just before we leave Cuba, and we do appreciate, Medea, that you've made it a part of your itinerary through this world to focus on this. What ends up happening is, you know, it all becomes like a negative story, for instance, on Cuba in this context. But there are so many lessons that the United States could learn and the United States people could learn, people to people. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Well, yes, and there's so many things that Cuba and the U.S. could do together to make the lives of people all over the world better. Cuba has first-class medicine and has developed all kinds of medicines that the U.S. doesn't have, and the Cubans have been training doctors from all over the world, more than the World Health Organization, and sending doctors all over the world, more than the World Health Organization. And the U.S. could be and should be supporting that instead of a campaign to call these doctors modern-day slaves because they don't get their entire salaries because a part of their salary is taken by the Cuban government to support its free healthcare system and free education to become a doctor in the first place. The U.S. and Cuba could be working on climate issues together because they're both affected by the climate crisis. They could be working on epidemics together because Cuba had 3 vaccines against COVID, very, very successful vaccines, and who knows when the next pandemic is going to hit. There are all kinds of things. And then let's just talk for a minute about cultural. I mean, there's such beautiful music and poetry and literature from Cuba. Cubans love and are great at baseball and should be allowed to participate in U.S. professional baseball without having to renounce Cuba. There are so many ways that Cuba and the U.S. could and should be working together that would be for the benefit of all. And we saw that for a brief moment under the Obama years when they started to normalize relations. It was a win-win. There were Cuban entrepreneurs that suddenly were getting access to resources and finances. There were people in the United States from the Cuban-American community that were able to really support their relatives and help them to create their own businesses. There was a lot of euphoria in Cuba during the brief moment when Cuba was being treated like any other country in a normal fashion. But then all that has changed with Obama and with Biden. And we're hoping that there's going to be some change in the Biden administration's policies now that it's clear that they lost Florida, that Florida, at least southern Florida, has gone Republican, that the Biden people are not going to win that back. They should look elsewhere for support, like among the Puerto Rican community in Florida. Maybe it will give them an opening to do the right thing and change the policy towards Cuba.
We're speaking with Medea Benjamin, and she's going to stay with us. Before we bring in Cynthia Papermaster, who is raging against the machine, I'm going to tell us about a protest coming up here in the Bay Area and around the country. I have to say, Medea, and I have said this before, but it's an incredibly important fact that when the U.S. came in to sustain a coup and kidnap John Patron Aristide in leap year in 2004, they put the military, they emptied out the what was the medical school that was founded by the Cubans there, and they put the U.S. military there and the international forces there to occupy Haiti. So they got rid of the doctors and they put back the guns. This is, of course, a terribly good transition to our discussion about rage against the madness, the war that is coming up. Code Pink, Medea is certainly a part of this, and also joining us is Cynthia Papermaster. She is, shall we say, Code Pink San Francisco. She's the key organizer, and she's definitely, well, you want to tell us why is rage? Do we all want to be raging? Isn't that what happens in a war? What are we raging against here, Cynthia?
Thank you. Thank you, Dennis.
Sure.
It's great to be on. And hi, Medea. Aloha, I should say.
Hello.
Okay. We are mounting the biggest San Francisco anti-war and anti-nuclear war event in 20 years for February 19th. And the rage part of it is a joyful kind of rage. I know that sounds oppositional. So how could you joyfully rage? But this is a giant street party that's mobile. do you want me to go into details, or?
You can do a few details, sure. Why not?
Okay. Well, first I would talk about the demands. Well, let me define the war machine just for a moment and think about the elements of the war machine.
Yes.
Of course, we have the Pentagon, and we have the Congress who finances the war machine and has for a very long time. A few decades, Congress. And then we have the White House who prosecutes the war. We have the warmonger-in-chief in the White House. And then we have the merchants of death, we call them, Lockheed, Raytheon, Boeing, Grumman, General Dynamics, all of those merchants of death who are making so much money from continual war and bloodshed. And then we have the cheerleading media, the mainstream media, who just parrots everything the Pentagon, the White House, and Congress tells them to say about the war instead of telling us the truth. And then we have the fossil fuel and nuclear industries. I mean, I could go on and on. Basically, what we have is a whole village of war machine entities that we're going to encounter at our event on the 19th, a whole village of
yeah. All right. Okay, hold that thought. I want to bring Medea back in here now. Your latest book, timely as it is, War in Ukraine, Making Sense Out of a Senseless Conflict. The amount of billions, Medea, you must know that you must have heard the latest little detail that's blowing my mind is the new fleet of forward fighting nuclear long range bombers, each one, I don't know all the initials what they're calling it, but each plane, each bomber, each pro-nuclear destroy the world machine costs $1 billion. $1 billion a bomber. Your thoughts on, is this, everybody says this is a war for the future of Europe. We're in, and I'm telling you, I get it from our audience, Medea. The Russians invaded. If we don't stop them here, we got to stop them there. Your thoughts, you wrote the book and you've been thinking deep about this, and we're raging against the war machine, so I figured I'd ask that question.
Yeah, well, you're talking about modernizing nuclear weapons, and it's $1 trillion program that the U.S. has. And if we actually use these weapons, we're talking about the end of the earth. So what sense does it make to be producing and modernizing these weapons that will destroy us all? And here we are in a proxy war with Russia, where we say that Putin is so crazy, but he will never use nuclear weapons, and that doesn't make any sense. And especially since we are just upping the ante constantly by escalating. You know, we sent the Patriot missiles, then it was the HIMARS. We said, okay, that's going to really do it. Well, that didn't do it. Then we're going to send in the tanks. Well, that's not really going to do it. We're going to need these fighter jets. Well, you know, that's not going to really do it. And then, what's the end game there? Is it indeed nuclear war? Is it a direct war with Russia? And that's where we're headed. And that's why we do have to rage against this war machine, because the war machine, as Cynthia so beautifully explained with all of its tentacles, is just taking us into disaster. And the American people have unfortunately been listening to too much mainstream media that has a narrative of only we send in this weapon, then the Ukrainians are going to win. No, well, now if we send this weapon, they're going to win. And we hear from generals, most of them retired because they're too afraid to say it if they're still in active service, say, wait a minute, there is no winning in this war. There is no victory in the battlefield. And we even heard that from the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, who said, negotiate. Yet, that is not where we're headed. And in fact, the U.S. has been sabotaging negotiations. And we heard that not only from Turkish officials who were involved in that, but now we're hearing it in an interview that former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said that he was involved in negotiations until the West came in and blocked it. So this is why we must rage, because our leaders are anxious to keep this war going in order to weaken Russia and allow the Ukrainians to keep dying for this and take us into this brink of a nuclear war.
Well, and of course now, Medea, There's what I'm calling the Hindenburg war policy. You know, I think we shot down the second blimp just before
funny.
We came on. It's not. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. Go on, whoever wants to talk.
Could I just talk for a moment about our event on the 19th?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, we have some demands, and they're wonderful demands. They're code each one of these demands is a code pink campaign. Not one more penny for war in Ukraine, because like Medea said, it's just escalating things to the brink of nuclear war. Second is global nuclear de-escalation. Climate justice is one of our demands. Climate justice. Slash the Pentagon budget. No war with Russia or China. Disband NATO. Restore civil liberties and free Julian Assange and all political prisoners. Those are our demands, and we plan to rage joyfully. As I said, it's more of a giant street party. Please don't call it a demonstration, and please don't call it a protest. It is an advocacy for life instead of death. And it's on February 19th at the Embarcadero Plaza, which is right near the San Francisco Ferry Building, a beautiful spot to gather with poetry, music, children's activities, a children's brigade, a dog brigade. Bring your dogs. Please bring your dogs. Good dogs. Nice dogs. And then also, we're going to have a giant tea party at Nancy Pelosi's house.
One more thing.
We're going to do a duck and cover drill at each of the three locations where the event will be held. We have to practice duck and cover. Practice makes perfect. And if we learn that duck and cover drill really well, the nuclear war will be safe from the nuclear war.
Now, is everybody welcome at this event? Are all political perspectives who show up for peace, are they welcome? There's a little controversy floating around.
Yeah, as long as they're peaceful. You know, as long as they agree to our demands, they are very welcome to come, and I am so delighted and so thrilled that we're making this coalition across ideological positions, because with the threat of nuclear war staring at us, we have to let go of our differences, at least temporarily, right?
Well, absolutely.
And what time does it start?
Here's the least funny thing about this today, you know, as we go to air, as we talk about this story. There was a massive disaster. We're seeing this unfold in another part of the world where over 20,000 people are already dead and they can't even scrounge up a couple of million dollars to assuage the level of suffering that is beyond belief and the imagination. And they, I don't think it took the UN or the United States 3 days to get a team there or something. And it's no secret why these people are dying, and what that has to do with the way in which medicine, food, is now all and is used as a weapon, immigration as a weapon. These are the new weapons against the people that sustain this terribly unequal distribution of wealth. What do both of you have to say about where this goes? How do you counteract? How many people are going to die from this earthquake because we already sent $50 billion in weapons to start World War III in the Ukraine?
Cynthia, go for it.
Okay. Everything is insane. Everything is upside down. Any money that we do have, any resources that we do have, we should unify and collaborate together to fight the twin existential threats to life on the planet. And first, I would say, because of the timeline involved, we should all be together to banish nuclear weapons and the threat of nuclear war. The other existential threat is the climate catastrophe. The climate catastrophe will kill us more slowly. But you know what really happened? I want to just share with you this thought that keeps coming into my mind. We are paying them to kill us. In other words, we are paying Lockheed Martin. We are paying the Pentagon. We are paying Congress. We are paying them to have these murderous policies, these monstrous policies that are killing us. So, I mean, does that sound insane to you?
It sounds insane to me, and I think of the people who are dying in this earthquake and how we could be giving over $100 billion to help these people, and yet we're investing it in keeping a war going where people are getting killed every day. So it's just a terrible indictment of our society about where we choose, those in power choose to spend our money, and how they fool us into thinking that it's somehow in our interest to keep the war in Ukraine going, to keep fueling this war machine, instead of doing things that will make people's lives better, whether it's here at home where there are so many needs, or whether it's in places around the world. And I just wish that we would hearken back to Martin Luther King's statement about a society that puts more of its resources into militarism than spiritual uplift is approaching spiritual death. And that's where we're headed unless we rage against the war machine and get out and turn it around.
Are you... The final question, or does it concern you? I mean, is the, say, for instance, the number one issue that we are walking the border of a nuclear war, that the United States has made a nuclear war much more possible by inventing the latest generation of so-called field nukes or pocket nukes, where the talk is loose about the possibility of having a nuclear war and getting away with it? Are we at a very dangerous moment in history?
Absolutely. And again, things are insane. Which country has ever used nuclear weapons? And which country seems to not have any moral difficulty with using nuclear weapons? And the only reason I'm answering that way is that the fear isn't that Russia's going to use a nuclear weapon, for me anyway. But we are both the most heavily armed nuclear nations, and these smaller nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear, whatever they are, they're just as deadly, and they could initiate full-on war, either conventional or nuclear. I mean, the danger right now is so great that we're 90 seconds till midnight, according to the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and they're not kidding. That's less than 2 minutes for everything to end. So we have to get, you know, just leave everything else and come out and rage with us. And I just want to say one more thing about that. We're not just talking to ourselves. We're going to the seats of power. We're going to Lockheed Martin. We're going to Nancy Pelosi's office. She wrote the checks for the military all these years she's been in office. And I know a lot of people say, oh, you can't go up there, whatever. No, we're going there. We're going there. So I'm going to stop now.
Well, we appreciate all that information. And just a point about nuclear. Whether you use them or not, you're using them. Israel's got a secret nuclear program of 500 or 1,000 or 10. We don't even know, because the United States has helped to keep it secret, and they're a nuclear renegade. But there's Pakistan and India. The nuclear weapons are being used. The United States is the one that decided to drop it on a couple of civilian cities, but nuclear weapons are now a part of the dialogue and a dangerous part of the dialogue. I really want to thank both of you for keeping this real. Before we say goodbye to you and welcome on Francisco Herrero, who's going to break the news that he's going to be at the raging. He's going to be out there raging with y'all.
Join the rage. Oh, that's great.
And we're going to hear a lot more from him. And he's got a little, we've got a special guest coming in there. But I thank Medea Benjamin. By the way, her book about the madness war in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. You can rage on February 19th, Rage Against the War Machine, Action with the Code Pinkers and everybody else who's going to be participating. Final website, phone number, whatever.
You can go to this email address and for details, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is Rage Against the War Machine in San Francisco. There's an Indie Bay post on the Indie Bay calendar if you use that, indiebay.org. And the email address to use is codepinksfbay@gmail.com. And I would welcome any questions and participation. Let's get 1,000 people out there. Let's get 1,000 people in the streets of San Francisco raging joyfully against the war machine and nuclear war. Thanks, Dennis.
What time?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, noon at the Embarcadero Plaza, which is just facing the ferry building at the foot of Market Street. Just a beautiful location.
And there's the organizer. Doesn't miss the detail. Thank you, Medea. Thank you, Cynthia. We'll talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you,
later.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dennis.
Ooh, thank all right. You. Bye-bye. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. What do they say about details? Details are very important. You know what I mean, like how you notice the development of the fine muscles in the children that you love. Yeah, details are crucial. And I'm worried about the suffering of the children. Because we keep making wars. Short break, we'll be back. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Joining us is our own special contributor, Francisco Herrera, my favorite troubadour in the Western Hemisphere. Always makes me happy, and a lot of people happy. Francisco, good to have you with us. I know you are, for people who are listening in the Bay Area, y'all gonna be with the wonderful and legendary David Rovics doing a little mini concert just a couple of blocks from where I'm broadcasting from, here in the Upper Mission, let's call it. Welcome, Francisco. How are you doing? It's been too long.
Yes, Dennis. I just really was appreciating your interview there with Medea and her wonderful book, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. we could since we've been reading the military industrial complex books called Making Dollars of a Senseless Conflict, but it's like I'm very, very happy that we're here with our good friend David Rovix, who's doing his West Coast tour, visiting many cities, and we'll be opening up for him here at the Redstone Labor Temple.
Do you guys have your guitars there?
We do. Do you guys have your guitars here?
You just like put the phone down somewhere. Could you both
I'm really enjoying because David has his bazooki, which is a wonderful kind of like a big long extended mandolin, and I said I'll trade my bazooka for a bazooki anytime. It's got a most wonderful
is this a double barrel?
They got a most wonderful exactly it's a got a most barrel. Wonderful sound and he's here with a good friend Kamala from Australia, who they've been touring together and working. So we're here and enjoying it.
So you're all going to do a song?
David and Kamala will do a piece here. We'll sing a little bit. We'll warm up with you guys on the radio.
Okay. Go.
Here goes.
In the halls of power in Washington, D.C., now that the pandemic has the planet on its knees, combined with the embargo since they tightened up the screws, they see something flammable, they want to light a fuse. The empire can't pass up a chance to undermine and pursue its imperial design. Aplastados unidos se creen el país elegido por Dios para acabar con el mundo en nombre de la libertad. From the halls of power in Washington, D.C., to the collapsing buildings on the shores of Miami, you can see them on the TV, the crusaders of the North, talking from the tent camps about bringing freedom forth from the land where there's a massacre each and every day. Listen to the president say, Aplastados Unidos se creen el país elegido por Dios para acabar con el mundo en nombre de la libertad. In the halls of power in Washington, D.C., in the wake of all the blood they have spilled across the sea and across the very nation that they claim is so free, where one in four children each night go to bed hungry. The riot police are rioting here somewhere every night, but other people need more rights. Aplastados Unidos se creen el país elegido por Dios para acabar con el mundo en nombre de la libertad. In the name of freedom.
Whew. David Rovix, he's going to be in company with Francisco Herrera. And who's the friend?
Kamala Emanuel.
Kamala
Emanuel from Australia, a musician moonlighting as a doctor.
Oh, you know what? You guys got to show up to me. I need a doctor and a song. Listen, this is
So we'll be here at the Red Temple at 6 p.m. Here at 2940 16th Street tonight.
Anyway, and that's a beautiful thing, and I'm hoping that people, I can hear them all leaning in. Very important, music, the troubadours, the people who keep us alive, who give us the news through the heart. I woke up in the middle of the night. I was last week. I was dreaming about Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger. I remembered. He's the first radio news interview I ever did. It was at a anti-nuclear protest. It was at an anti-nuclear protest on Long Island at Shoreham, I think it was called. And I literally, it was my first assignment as a news person, and I'm there by the water, which is right next to the, behind the nuclear plant they're trying to build. And I'm just sitting there in the clear water. Pete Seeger's boat pulls up, a little rope ladder comes over the side, and with his banjo over his back and his pants rolled up, I was there waiting at the shoreline for Pete Seeger to do my first interview. So what do you think I asked him? I couldn't think of what could I ask Pete Seeger. I said, Pete Seeger, what should people be doing here? They're protesting this nuclear thing. What should they be doing? He says, well, if I was a group of kids, four or five or six kids, I'd get some hammers and some nails, and I'd put myself together a solar collector. And my first line on the news. Listen, you guys, it's amazing. Francisco, what's on your mind these days? I'm thinking a lot about what's been going on at the border, shipping folks around, you know, like we're back in the slave day. We need 1619 investigations more than ever. What's going on in your mind, Francisco? You deal with this at so many different levels.
More than ever, and we're seeing them families. I mean, yeah, it is. Well, not even close. It is literal slavery, because you have a lot of trafficking that's going on, and so that capitalist venture called slavery is still very much alive. I mean, we've stopped many things, but people crossing the border are arriving here in the Bay Area in many numbers, and we're seeing it here in the day labor program. And what we're finding is, you know, that instead of opening spaces, you're getting state policies like AB 2011, which is a policy that has been passed now at the level of the state, which will override all our local municipal laws in protection for affordable housing, and is attempting to speedy up construction of luxury buildings under the guise of affordable housing. But it's really for affordable housing for people who are making $110,000 a year. and then here in the Mission, it's totally destruction of the murals, of the small stores, of the whole Mission corridor is lined up for destruction, which will happen very fast because of AB 2011, which is being passed as a labor friendly law, because it'll raise the prevailing wage. So people are presenting it as a labor friendly law, when in fact what it is, it's going to open the road for luxury construction with no holds barred. And so all the stuff, all the work we've done and all the work people have done in the inner cities and in cities to stop the creation of luxury is being thrown out over, will be overwritten by this 2011. So we've got a lot of work that we have to develop in the area of creating livelihood and creating housing for our families, for ourselves, really, because right now the idea is really to throw us out of the cities, and it's horrendous thing that we're facing, and we're going to need a lot more organizing, a lot more people on the street. And literally, I think we're going to need to come out on the street and stop the bulldozers, because that's what's coming up with the state law that Wiener and all the other folks passed and are masquerading it as some kind of a hooray for affordable housing, when in fact it's the exact opposite. And I'm sure you guys are seeing it in Portland and the other areas, no, David?
This is the thing, that's the kind of thing going on everywhere. Absolutely, yep. Yep.
Well, I know there's a, just down the block from where, you know, where I live, Francisco, and they're building this massive, I was hoping it was low income, but is it that same kind of low income that's not low income? Is that another,
yeah,
you know, that massive?
Yeah, there is some spaces that are open in those buildings, but if, the fact of the matter is, if you're a janitor, if you've got a little vending business, if you're maybe even if you're a teacher, you know, but you really don't qualify, because it's just still too expensive. So we have a lot of more work to do in really creating real affordability. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on. Francisco, David, it's always a joy. Listen to your music all the time, and the songs are just amazing, one after the other. It's nice that you've got a beautiful sort of colleague partner there traveling with you. It must be nice to have that kind of voice along. And the emergency medical crew, just in case.
Yeah, exactly. A heart attack. Hopefully she knows how to get a defibrillator.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I'm sure you'd do much better, depending upon her medical support, than that which is coming from the large corporations that say they want to heal us. But I'm not getting into that now, because we're out of time. Where are you guys going to be tonight, Francisco?
At the Redstone Labor Temple here at 2940 16th Street in San Francisco, 16th and Mission BART station, and the 22 bus line. But also people...
And David, how do people follow you, David? How do people follow you?
It starts at the top of the hour, too. It starts at 6 o'clock, so people should rush over. You can find me at davidrovics.com, and I'm on Spotify and all that. Yeah, and I got
right,
other
thank you
in your listening area, Topanga, San Diego.
I know that. That's why I want people to go to David Rovics and check it out, because you're all over the place.
Great.
Thank you. Thank
all
you
right,
both.
Brother.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to play a clip where Francisco and I have been fighting to free Julian Assange, and we're going to play later on in this broadcast a piece we wrote together to free Assange. But here is the great filmmaker John Pilger talking about his friend Julian Assange. When's the last time you saw Julian, heard from Julian?
I saw Julian about a month ago, and I spent 2 hours with him in Belmarsh prison, and I must say I was encouraged by this visit, because I felt he was in better shape than when I last seen him. I thought his spirits were up. And I discussed this with his wife, Stella. And of course, as she rightly points out, it can go up and then go terribly down.
Yeah.
But life is a kind of roller coaster of anxiety. I mean, this is true of most people in prison, but I think in Julian's case, where he has this Damocles sword of extradition hanging over his head, so when I've seen him in the past, he hasn't been in good condition. So I have seen him in various, I've seen him in various circumstances, and but I was pleased that Julian's resilience, which I've always regarded as remarkable, appears to be working. That he's holding up. That's the best way of describing it, I think.
That's very good news. We are glad to hear that, John, and we're glad that we have all been able to work with Julian, and that he also has a friend like you, and there are people all over this world to understand and recognize the work he's done for the people, for to help all of us think more clearly about the world and how to act inside of it. He really has given a gift, and he created a structure to counteract that which we essentially have been alluding to throughout this hour, is that the flow of information, of clean, clear, crucial, unfettered information, not meant to prop up a war or a dictator, it's hard to get. And here was somebody who created a way for us to understand more about our world. Am I overstating the case?
Well, yes, and he's given us, WikiLeaks gave us information, unfettered information, information that hadn't been contaminated, hadn't been distorted, and I believe that most people understand that we have a right to that information. We have a right to know. And that's what WikiLeaks provided.
And he was that dangerous that the U.S. intelligence agencies plotted to kill him? What makes him that dangerous?
Yeah, well, that's very dangerous. The truth is always dangerous. As many truth tellers have learned, truth telling, whistleblowing, whatever you wish to call it, is a very dangerous occupation, probably the most dangerous. Because you'll find against you adversaries that you may not see, you may not hear, but they're there. In Julian's case, of course, once they could get their hands on him, the full scale of his importance and punishment is now happening. The time he spent, he went into Belmarsh prison in April 2019. It feels like, and it feels to him, and it certainly feels to those of us who visited him, to be a much longer sentence. Because hanging over him is the prospect of then spending the rest of his life in an American hellhole. And that's a real prospect at the moment. However, he hasn't been extradited. It's still in the courts. It's still grinding its way through an arcane system. So there's still hope.
Just to let people know that, excuse me, there is a new film about the plight of Julian Assange that will be showing in the Bay Area and in different parts of the country will be welcoming Julian's father and brother and some of the entourage, the filmmaker, the folks who worked on that film. And we'll be talking more about that tomorrow on our Flashpoint show with Medea Benjamin, who just happens to be back from Cuba as well. So she's got a lot to say about that trip as well. We're speaking now, and we're honored and really happy to have the chance to speak with John Pilger, who what's the latest count of how many films you've made, John? I can't count that life.
I counted them last time at 61.
And they're 61. All worth... They're all worth seeing. And they're at the... They're now... forgive me, because I don't have all my notes in front of me, but they're now... All your film collection is now stored in Great Britain at the archives, at the National Archives?
Or? Yeah, they're available. Anybody can watch most of them. I simply have to go to my website, johnpilger.com, www.johnpilger.com. Go to video, and there they are. I put them up to be available for everybody. And so if people are interested, that's the way to see them. They are... That normal archive is now stored at the British Library in London. But the films are available for watching.
Well, that is terrific. I wish there were as many John Pilgers as there are John Pilger films, because we could use... I would like that, just to see the powers that be run away. Because if you had a John Pilger in every country, that would be a good start. But seriously, the plight of journalism, which we hate to talk about, but it's gone crazy. It's gotten absolutely ridiculous, and of course we know at the root of it all is an idiotic school system. Where you got governors in America running around carrying the war, putting the, you know, going eye to eye with the woke. we're gonna be woke. Well, we'll make sure we don't wake. John. yes. Well, what else? Just sort of, you know, as we get ready to say goodbye.
I think we're probably exhausted at the moment.
You know, we get so few shots. I like to take advantage.
No, I'm happy to whenever. Come on as often as you like. Yeah.
That's great, John. That's great. And we are looking forward to bringing the Assanges into town, fighting that fight. Our friend Randy Credico has been unrelenting in his sign campaign,
which has been
amazing.
Randy has been doing an amazing job with his programs about Julian. Extraordinary, absolutely indefatigable, just wonderful work. So have you, Dennis. There's a small list of honor of people who have kept the Julian Assange story alive, and you're on it, and Randy is, and not many others.
It's amazing how he has been abandoned. Of course, why would we, you know, this is how he slapped me in the face. Why would I be surprised that the journalistic community, which has everything to lose, is still willing to abandon him? It sort of reminds me of the way the Republicans cling to the Trumpites. You know, it's like they can't think of anything else to do, so they do the same old, same old. It's insane.
Yeah.
And they can't see they're not journalists. Gotta go crazy.
Yeah.
All right, John, be safe. Take care of yourself. We really appreciate all the time
you
spent with us today.
Yeah.
And
all the very best to you. And and to your listeners. Thank you, Dennis.
Okay, thank you. You're welcome. It's an honor. Be safe.
As a journalist, I saw that we could achieve a lot of reform with a little bit of work. In some cases, one classified video can possibly stop a war.
A military chopper opens fire. Instruments of genocide. WikiLeaks unmask the lie. Central Command, gunsight video nails the murder scene down. Julian told the truth about the war machine. It's getting late in the hour, don't wait another minute to speak truth to power. Up in flames,